I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story.
Good afternoon, everybody. COVID-19 can be characterized as a pandemic.
The winter months aren't just cold and flu season, it's also pneumonia season.
You need to go after the virus. You need to stop the chains of transmission.
We have some news just in for you now. Authorities have confirmed a sixth death in Australia from coronavirus. New South Wales Health said an 86-year-old man who tested positive for COVID-19 died in the city.
Right now, scientists are racing to understand how coronavirus spreads and what it does to the body. But we only know so much. Today, the science of COVID-19. So, Graham, I feel like covering and reading about this story over the last couple of weeks, there's been so many graphs, there's been a lot of counting of death tolls, but I feel like I haven't read that much about what it's really like to have COVID-19. Can you actually break that down for us?
Yeah, so let's walk it back a little bit.
Graham Redfern is a reporter at Guardian Australia.
So COVID-19 is the name of the illness. And the virus that causes the illness is, well, it's called Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome Coronavirus 2.
Now, coronaviruses that circulate among humans are typically benign, and they cause about a quarter of all common cold illnesses.
Now, when you get the illness caused by the virus,
at a microscopic level, coronaviruses are single-strand positive sense RNA viruses with protein spikes on their surface. These spikes allow the virus to invade cells lining the respiratory tract and lungs.
You're going to fall into one of four categories, probably. Or you're going to move through these four categories. The first one, actually, is one that almost no one will notice. It's called subclinical. That just means that, like, you can't really tell you've got anything. You might even only have a sniffle. So with this first category, the subclinical category, people with really almost no symptoms at all, there is some evidence that even those people have the ability to sort of transmit the virus, but that seems to be something that the experts are still really trying to work to understand. Then the next group are people that might have symptoms that are just similar to the everyday cold, probably wouldn't in normal circumstances even keep them off work. Then a third group would be people who would have the kind of flu symptoms that on any other flu year would probably keep them home. Sore throat, cough, maybe problems breathing. But then a fourth group would end up with a form of pneumonia. Now, interestingly, that's the pneumonia is what the health authorities in Wuhan noticed first. They had this group of people with pneumonia and they didn't know how they were getting it. And if you're part of this fourth group, then the illness is quite severe.
What is the rate of people who, you know, get the illness and get better versus the people who become seriously ill?
Yeah, so overall, the World Health Organization says about 80% of people with COVID-19, they'll recover. They probably won't really need any sort of specialist medical treatment. And only about one in six would get sort of seriously ill enough that they might have difficulty breathing. In Wuhan, it's only about 6% of people had this really sort of severe illness that went on to turn into pneumonia. But bearing in mind, whatever the death figure happens to be at the time when we're listening to this, almost all of those cases will have contracted pneumonia, unfortunately, before they pass away.
Let's look at what happens inside your body when you do have pneumonia. You know, it may start with the common symptoms, coughing that's intractable, but the pneumonia can actually occur deep down in the lung, one or both lungs. It causes inflammation. You might see fluid buildup like you see there in those small, tiny air sacs. Your body's immune response, all those inflammatory cells build up.
Hello.
Hey, Tom, it's Ellen.
Ellen, hi.
How you going?
Good. Would you just be able to give us a bit of a description of how pneumonia develops in the body after, you know, one of these coronaviruses?
Yeah, so maybe I'll start with just the breathing passages.
Tom Kotsimbos is an associate professor at Monash University and a specialist respiratory physician at the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne. He spoke to producer Ellen Leibeater.
And we generally, as respiratory physicians, divide them into three bits. There's a bit in the upper airway, so from the voice box up, mouth, nose, all that area. That's the upper respiratory tract. Then as we go into the chest, there's a central tube, the trachea, and that goes into a whole lot of bronchial tubes. That's the lower respiratory tract. And then we have the lung, the body of the lung, where all the little sacs that do the hard work of, in inverted commas, gas exchange are. When you have infection in any of these spots, it's a different syndrome. So in the upper respiratory tract, it's a cold. In the lower respiratory tract, so the tubes, it's often a bronchitis. So it's often associated with cough and phlegm. And when it involves the deep alveolar sacs, where all the action occurs and we're very dependent on getting our oxygen in and so on, that's called a pneumonia. And that has significant implications because it's targeting the infection, is targeting a very, very important part of our biology because it's important in getting oxygen in. And it's also because the way our lungs work, those alveolar sacs are very, very thin. They have evolved over a long period of time to be so thin, so we maximise our oxygen going in. And the problem with that is when they are so thin, any inflammation floods them, so we get sick very quickly.
Another episode of pneumonia. Now, having said that, there are risk factors. So age is a risk factor. Smoking is a risk factor. And if you have cold and flu, you're at greater risk. In addition to that, some people have chronic illnesses like COPD, asthma, cardiovascular disease, liver cirrhosis, and diabetes. And that increases the risk.
So people who are more vulnerable, are they more likely to experience pneumonia?
So it can happen in anybody. And we've seen this now, particularly in Italy and other parts of Europe, but also China, where younger people, so anybody, this can happen to. It's much more common the more vulnerable you are, either because your immune system isn't good enough at keeping things in check or because other factors in your risk makeup mean that the disease progresses quicker. And I'm thinking there particularly people with chronic lung or heart disease or cardiovascular disease.
So are there different levels of pneumonia? Like, can you get pneumonia and be just treating it at home, or do you always have to be hospitalised if you get it?
If you're very young, you can tolerate pneumonia, but generally if you have pneumonia, it's a serious illness. You'll be more likely to tolerate it the fitter and weller you were before you got the pneumonia. In terms of different levels, one way to think about it is the more it stops, the more the infection and the inflammation fill in the air sacs, either in a part of a lung, a whole lung, or both lungs, the harder it'll be for you to breathe and get oxygen in, and therefore the sicker you'll be.
That sounds incredibly painful, like a horrible experience to go through.
It has to be distressing. I mean, breathing in, breathing out. Of course, we don't even have to think about it, but with people with these severe respiratory problems that's caused by this virus, breathing in, breathing out becomes a challenge.
Can you describe what it feels like to have pneumonia?
I think it's scary. It's very scary when you can't breathe. There's not many things that we face that are worse than feeling that you can't take enough air in or have enough oxygen and feeling breathless. So then what happens is the body compensates by making you breathe faster. And when you breathe faster, that's very uncomfortable. And when the reason for the breathing faster is an infection, then you've got the extra problems of a high temperature making you uncomfortable, getting dehydrated, and any other organs that may be involved making it all a lot more difficult. When they're very sick, and a person with pneumonia is really in quite a lot of trouble.
So I've had something like this. They're still not really sure what it was. In my mid-20s, I was a backpacker, and I got what they thought was a sort of a version of Ross River virus. And I was on a ventilator, and I've had masks on and drips, and I couldn't talk at all without breaking into this unbelievable cough that almost sort of sucked all the air out of me. I can imagine what it feels like, because just the feeling that you can't even talk without coughing and you just can't get the air into you, it's really distressing.
Do we know if COVID-19 pneumonia is different from, you know, pneumonia that people might get from other things?
Yeah, we do, because most people that present to hospitals with pneumonia, it's usually bacterial. It's pneumonia caused by bacteria, and of course then we have antibiotics, and that's treatable. Viral pneumonia is different. There's some evidence to suggest that one viral pneumonia, it's harder to treat, but with this particular COVID-19 pneumonia, it also tends to affect more of the lungs than other types of pneumonia. So it's not the same, it's worse, and it's harder to treat.
How do you actually treat viral pneumonia?
Well, you can't. Once you get pneumonia, there's no cure for pneumonia. There's no medicine that they can give us to get rid of it. They can give us things like antiviral medications and antibiotics, but that's only really to fight any secondary infections that we might get. Once you're on the ventilator, you're in intensive care, and then it's crossing your fingers time and hoping that you pull through.
So we know about some of these high-risk groups. Are there any groups that don't seem to be affected as much?
Well, we don't seem to be seeing really any serious impact on children. That doesn't mean that kids that get the disease can't take it home with them or take it to other places and spread that around. So I guess that's the problem that the public health authorities have got to deal with. I think it's worth saying too that so many aspects of this virus are unknown. You know, they only started seeing the first cases on the 31st of December 2019. And at that point, they didn't know what was causing the pneumonia in Wuhan. So it's a new virus, and they don't know how it behaves. So much of the knowledge that we have is based on how previous viruses have behaved and on science that's sort of emerging really, really quickly, and it's been done really super quickly, sometimes without peer review, to try and inform the decisions that we're having to make right now.
Next, what we can learn from this emerging research. Okay, so our knowledge of this virus is really being rapidly formed, and we're pulling from our knowledge of viruses in general at the moment. With that in mind, what should we be looking out for in the coming months?
The virus so far has grown in countries that they're in winter, and Australia is coming into winter. So what do those cooling temperatures mean for how the virus might behave, how it might spread? There's three ways that temperature influences how the virus will behave. And it's, I guess, I've been searching for an analogy here, and I think kind of a good one maybe is you've got a car, and a car has got an accelerator, it's got a brake, and it's got gears. And depending on the combination of how you press the brake, the accelerator, or what gear you're in, depends how quickly you can accelerate or slow down. And you know, you have different combinations of those, and they will all dictate how far the car goes. It's similar with the virus. The virus will react to temperature biologically, like it might have a preference for a particular temperature range in which it can survive longer. But there's no real solid evidence to show that it likes cooler temperatures. So that's the first way that it reacts, sort of biologically. But secondly, temperature, as we come into winter, our immunity may have changed a little bit because there's already lots of bugs around and viruses around that we already know we get. The third factor is temperature also changes our behavior as humans. And in the winter, we just all tend to go inside. We're all huddled together a bit more. That helps viruses to spread.
So it could be more dangerous purely because we are forced indoors because of winter.
Yeah, winter certainly isn't going to make things any easier.
I've just got one final question. Are we expecting this to get worse in winter?
I think that's a big question. And I think the short answer is yes. But there are so many aspects to it. The first is we're coming into a winter, so viruses do spread more during winter. That'll be true, I think, for this virus too. The second is it'll be in the setting of a whole lot of other viruses, which will confound the picture and make things incredibly difficult, because if we don't have real-time accurate testing to help guide us with who's got COVID and who's got some other virus, then all that pool will add to the physical burden of needing to be managed, but also the psychological burden. And then there's the issue of in going the way we're going about it, trying to flatten the epidemic curve, which means trying to reduce the number of cases as much as possible now so we don't have a whole lot of infections that create a huge peak that will overwhelm our healthcare system. In doing that, it necessarily follows that the epidemic curve or the pandemic curve will probably last for longer.
I feel like the line that we've heard repeated a lot, both from, you know, some of our leaders and people online, is, oh, you know, this is just the flu. It's just about as bad as the flu. With everything that we know now, is that statement true?
I can't see how it can be. Flu is out there. We know how it behaves. There are vaccines for it. Our healthcare system is set up to cope with it. We don't know yet how this coronavirus behaves. We don't even know what role temperature plays with it. We don't really know how to best treat it yet. We don't have a vaccine for it yet. Whether it's worse or better than the flu, that's not really the question. I think the real question is, do we have the capacity to care for people that catch it?
Okay, Graham, thanks so much.
Thanks, Laura.
So I know that this week has been a pretty tough week for a lot of people. It's also been pretty heartening to see people coming together, looking out for one another, especially looking out for people who are really vulnerable in our communities. If you have a great story about that, we want to hear from you. Give us a call on 02 8076 8550 and leave a voicemail. And if you want, you can also leave us a name and a number to call you back. That's it for today. Thanks to Graham Redfern for his time. You can read his reporting at theguardian.com, plus a bunch more coverage of the coronavirus from across The Guardian. This episode was produced by Shane Anderson, Ellen Leibeater, and Joe Coney. Our executive producers are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.